This is an ABC podcast.
This is Pacific Beach on ABC Radio Australia. Good morning, I'm Catherine Grau. Today on the program, we're largely talking health right across the Pacific, and we're going to begin in PNG because one of the country's best-known musicians is hoping that his encounter with mouth cancer will inspire others to give up the traditional practice of chewing betel nut. The award-winning singer George Telec nearly lost his ability to sing after doctors were forced to perform emergency surgery to remove a tumour earlier this year. PNG has the world's highest rates of mouth cancer. And experts say that's because of the country's high rates of betel nut consumption, which can make a deadly combination when mixed with lime and mustard powder. And one leading expert says the situation is only worsened because PNG's health system can't help cancer patients. Bethany Harriman has this special report from Port Moresby.
Betel nut, known locally as buai, is big business in Papua New Guinea's capital, Port Moresby. At the buai trade epicenter, Hanuabada Market, wooden stalls protected from the hot sun bearing down by large colourful umbrellas are busy.
When I sell betel nut, like I earn some money to buy protein for afternoon. Sometimes use it for like bus fare.
They earn about 140 to 150.
Naime Ray from Hanuabada says families sell betel nut because the city has few jobs available.
When people sell it, they earn the income and then use it to pay their children's fee and to buy bread and butter for their family, especially for non-workers, unemployed people. This is the main thing that they sell and then income from. So nowadays it's very hard to find a job.
Another buai seller, Laos Philip, set up her stall along a street in a more affluent part of the city to sell betel nut to the wealthy.
You know, they say betel nut causes cancer, mouth cancer, and I can see your teeth are red. And you sell betel nut. How do you feel about that? Will that stop you? Does it stop customers?
Actually, like, we are addicted and we think it's bad, but we know it, but we sort of ignore it or, like, they pretend that nothing will happen.
And how do you feel when you chew why?
When I chew betel nut, I feel like I'm alive or something like that. Without betel nut, I feel like I'm dead or I'll sleep or something.
Chewing betel nut is a mild stimulant. It gives a rush similar to smoking a cigarette. It also does serious damage and can be deadly. George Telec is probably the most recognized PNG musician in the world, and now perhaps one of the most important voices advocating against betel nut chewing. Earlier this year, the ARIA-winning singer was diagnosed with mouth cancer after years of chewing betel nut.
It was a surprise to me that I have this tumor. They diagnosed as tumor cancer on my lips only.
And what did the doctor say? Was it because of buai chewing? What did they say?
It is exactly. It's from the lime and partly from betel nut and mustard. Yeah, the doctor told me back in Brisbane in the hospital that
Mr. Telec, like so many others in PNG, chewed betel nut by mixing it with a stick of mustard and fine white powder, which is known as lime and is usually crushed up coral. Mixed with saliva, that combination creates a red paste and leaves people's mouths and teeth stained red. After his recent scare, George Telec says he stopped the habit and is happy to even be alive.
And what's your message to Papua New Guineans who are chewing at the moment and who are at risk?
They should stop from chewing betel nut every day, every morning, every night, because it's very dangerous to our health and our mouth.
With the treatment that you've received, how do you feel now? Are you okay?
I'm very well okay, because they took the tumour, the cancer, away from my lips, didn't went in to my mouth, was just outside. I won't chew anymore. It's like I'm very scared to chew.
George Telec was lucky. Because of his stature, people around the world rallied to help fundraise to cover the cost of his medical treatment and recovery. Papua New Guinea has only one cancer treatment facility for its population of around 8 million people. Dr. Polopoi Chala was in charge of it for 18 years. He says the cancer facility, located in Lae City's Angau Hospital, treated around 10 people per week.
Mouth cancer is still a major problem for the Department of Health, for the government of PNG, and for us as individuals. Please, let's be serious about our health. We need to cut off all these traditional habits, cultural habits.
Mouth cancer is the number one cancer killer of PNG men and for women. It's the third most common killer. And experts say there's no denying the link with chewing betel nut. Australian oral surgeon Dr. Barry Reid recently said that 98% of people with mouth cancer chew betel nut. But it doesn't have to be that way. Apart from giving up chewing completely, doctors also say that early detection can help a patient's survival chances greatly. For George Telek, his doctors say he won't need further chemotherapy, and he's now excited to return home to his village, where he'll continue to spread the message about the dangers of chewing buai.
That's the voice of the PNG singer George Telek, ending that special report from Bethany Harriman. Well, when it comes to betel nut, public health is not the only issue because its impact on the reputation and cleanliness of cities like Port Moresby and Honiara in Solomon Islands has long been a concern for local authorities. Both capitals have introduced bans on betel nut sales, but as Bindi Bryce reports, cracking down on a Melanesian tradition has its challenges.
In Papua New Guinea alone, it's estimated that for almost half the population, chewing buai is a favourite pastime. Busa Wanogo from CMIC, PNG's Consultative Implementation and Monitoring Council, is a researcher who specialises in the informal economy. He says betel nut is a lucrative trade.
Estimates, for example, are saying that betel nut is estimated around 100 million kina annually. Even it could be more than that.
Chewing betel nut is entrenched in PNG culture, but in recent years, the side effects have increased the burden on the health system. And for Port Moresby's governor, Powers Parkop, betel nut shells and red spit littering the streets are a stain on the capital city's reputation. But Mr. Wanogo says beneath the surface, the governor's ban on trading and chewing buai has not gone smoothly.
The ban was not really working, although it led to a cleaner city. There's been a lot of issues and problems that have arisen as a result of the ban, and news of deaths and illegal smuggling of betel nut into the cities were some of the examples.
There's growing concern in neighbouring Solomon Islands too about the health risks and uncleanliness associated with betel nut consumption. Honiara's City Council Clerk Charles Kelly says they are targeting the traders.
Honiara is a very fast-moving, growing city. And I think the council is looking to see that the city is kept clean. Right now, there's no permit issued for betel nut, not single one, not at all. People can chew betel nut at their own wish, even though they're aware of health hazards and whatever. But the council does not provide or issue any permit at all.
Recently, police dismantled betel nut stalls at the Robe Market as part of the council's push to limit the sale of buai to restricted areas of Honiara. And it's a policy that Mr. Kelly says most residents are backing.
Right now, we have not entered any problem with it. I think they're fully aware of the issue that the council's position is it right now. I think most of the elites in Honiara, they're supporting the council as to keep Honiara city clean, because betel nut is an issue that right now it's not making the face of the city look lively.
While Mr. Kelly acknowledges that chewing betel nut is well established in Solomon Islands, he says the authorities in Honiara must stand firm.
Sometimes we tend to be very lenient because it's the livelihood of people, because people make betel nut as their daily income that meet their needs, like get money and able to buy something to take back to the family end of the day. But as I say, as the council's position is, we can only allow to settle betel nut certain area.
Meanwhile, in Port Moresby, the betel nut bans have led to claims of police brutality against the sellers. Economist Busa Wanogo says the national government needs to take responsibility and find a better long-term solution.
Because right now we don't have a policy, although betel nut is widely consumed, and it's captured in the country's CPI, Consumer Price Index. There is really no government policies on how best to tackle betel nuts. It needs to be a regulation that understands the fact that people are getting into this activity as a form of survival, as a form of income generation.
The governor of the National Capital District, Powers Parkop, has since admitted that a citywide ban on betel nut in Port Moresby is not the best way forward. And with the APEC Leaders Summit approaching in November, Governor Parkop has announced that a ban on buai will only apply in commercial and public areas, mainly in Baroka and 4 Mile. So the challenge for both Port Moresby and Honiara would appear to be clear. Find the right balance between cracking down on buai sales while still respecting a long-held Melanesian tradition.
That's Bindi Bryce reporting. The Solomon Islands government is under fire from certain elements of the health sector over what they claim is an alarming shortage of medication at the country's main hospital. The issue has been a talking point in recent days, with the country's medical association leading the calls for a state of emergency to be declared at the National Referral Hospital until the supplies are restored. But the country's Prime Minister, Rick Ho, says that's not necessary, as Bindi Bryce reports.
Concerns about supplies of drugs and medicine at the National Referral Hospital and other small clinics in Honiara has been building for some time. The issue exploded on social media recently, with the calls for urgent government intervention being led by the Solomon Islands Medical Association's president, Dr. Claude Posala. He told local media that the situation is so severe that the operating theatre at the National Referral Hospital has scaled down its activities and is only treating emergency cases. Permanent Secretary at the Ministry of Health, Tenneth Dalapanda, confirmed that supplies are running thin.
There was an anaesthetist who wrote me a letter. He's thinking of downscaling to only emergency and leaving elective. I've advised somebody to fly in what he needs to go and see him. Give him his list, and this one we will fly it in so that it keeps the theatre open.
In response to growing public concern, Prime Minister Rick Ho held a press conference to reassure Solomon Islanders that they are working to get the stocks of medicines back to normal. The supplies are ordered months in advance, and Mr. Ho says delays around this year's supply are due to a communication error. Until the medicine stocks are restored, the Medical Association is calling for a state of emergency to be declared at the National Referral Hospital. But Mr. Dalapanda says the situation is under control.
It doesn't happen except for this glitch last year. We are very aware of the reason for the glitch, why procurement was delayed. We were thinking of calling it an emergency, that is right. But first of all, you call emergency when you don't have money.
The Ministry of Health has placed an extra 4 orders, it says, to fill the gap temporarily. Meanwhile, the Solomon Islands opposition have expressed its concern too, with leader Manase Malanga urging the government to make the medicine shortage its priority ahead of the parliament sitting this week.
That's Bindi Bryce reporting. Well, over in Papua New Guinea, health authorities in Morobe province fear there may be a twin outbreak on their hands that they say could have been prevented if immunisation levels for children were better. The PNG government last month declared a public health emergency after a case of the crippling disease polio was confirmed in a boy living in a settlement in Lae in Morobe. A local newspaper is now reporting that 3 measles cases have also been recorded. Measles is a highly infectious illness that can cause pneumonia and even death in young children. Both measles and polio are easily preventable, though, through vaccinations. Our reporter Bethany Harriman has been following the developments.
Bethany, we've heard about this reoccurrence of the polio disease in Morobe province. After 18 years, the belief had been that it had been eradicated. And now also we're hearing these reports that measles has resurfaced. Can you tell us more?
Well, Catherine, just yesterday, health authorities launched a polio vaccination campaign in Lae. And on the same day, a local newspaper reported what it called a twin break in Morobe, measles and polio.
What are authorities in Lae saying, Bethany?
Well, at this stage, all we know is the provincial health advisor, Mika Yawing, told the national newspaper that 3 cases of measles has been detected in the province, 1 case in the Back Road settlement in Lae and the other in 14 Mile. In the Huon district. So Anger Hospital, the biggest hospital in the province, has its work cut out. I spoke with David Wissink, the hospital's chairman. Here is what he had to say.
The Minister for Health and the Secretary for Health, along with country representatives for WHO and UNICEF, came to Morobe Delay to launch the polio eradication program. This is for Morobe, Madang, and Eastern Highlands, and it was done in conjunction with the governor from Morobe.
The community there in Lae, how are they taking this? Finally, they have the polio vaccination starting. I'm sure most of the mothers there were afraid when they heard that there was an outbreak.
The last reported case of polio was in the year 2000. In the year 2000, everybody declared that the PNG was polio-free. So it was a bit surprising to find this case coming from one of the Miles communities in Lae. And there was, there's a lot of murmurings happening in the community saying, what's going to happen? Is there going to be a massive outbreak? Yeah, I don't have the numbers of cases that have been found. As far as we know, there's just the one. There's been a couple others found in other parts of PNG. But it just has to do with immunization coverage of all things. I mean, there's been a couple of reports of measles as well. And all these things are very easily immunized. And these are diseases that we should be immunizing our children for.
And how is ANGAL prepared for this campaign?
We're prepared to provide extra manpower to make sure it happens. The provincial government is putting together a plan, which we've seen the plan now that'll go throughout the Morobe province. And where we're being asked to provide assistance, we'll step in and provide assistance. And some of the immunization work we can do right there at the hospital itself.
That's David Wissink. He's the chairman of ANGAL Hospital in Lae in PNG. He was speaking with our reporter, Bethany Harriman. Police in Samoa have announced an inquest will be held into the deaths of two babies who died shortly after they were given the routine immunisation for measles, mumps and rubella. The repercussions of those deaths are continuing to ripple throughout Samoa, with the tragedy exposing concerns over the wider public trust in the country's healthcare sector. Pacific Beat reporter Nick Fogarty has been following this story.
Nick, what is the situation in Samoa?
There's been an emotionally charged response to the death of the two children coming from all quarters, and this includes the Samoan Prime Minister Tuilipa Salele. He released a very heartfelt and personal statement after the tragedy, which spoke about the grieving process for the families, but also strayed into slightly more political territory, with a mention of the proposed merger between two of the country's major health bodies. Specifically, it says, the deaths also reaffirm the desires behind the government to proceed with the merger between the National Health Services and the Ministry of Health at full speed. When completed, the merge will ensure that incidents of this nature will not be repeated. It's a message to our people that deaths of the two young infants are not in vain. And then he goes on to say, when it comes to the health sector, government does not and will not put a price tag on saving our people's lives. So the merger of these two agencies has been a contentious topic in Samoa for a while now. And over the last day or so, I've tried to get in touch with leaders in both the Ministry of Health and NHS, but haven't had any luck yet.
Might still be several weeks until the investigations into the cause of the deaths of the two children are finished. So how is the public reacting, though, at this stage, Nick?
There really seems to be a worrying lack of trust in the health system in general, which is probably reinforced by comments like the Prime Minister's about the health system merger. These concerns haven't gone unnoticed by the World Health Organization, who provide a lot of assistance with Samoa's immunisation program. And we put it to the head of the WHO in Samoa, Dr. Razul Bagarov, that public confidence in the health system had taken a hit.
Yes, no, absolutely. What we know, of course, there was a very emotional reaction last week to the events. We know that, parents are some parents refusing now to taking their kids to be vaccinated or even, attend the hospital for any other reasons. So this is definitely also in the focus for us. We also want to see, building confidence back, but obviously that may take some time. Ministry and the government, in their turn, they're also planning to look at the whole of immunization program in Samoa, just to do some review to see what works and where some improvements could be made. This is still kind of in parallel with investigation ongoing.
So as you heard, there's obviously a lot of fear there among the public. As we know, the Samoan authorities have recalled the measles, mumps and rubella vaccine while the investigation goes on. But with parents afraid to let their children have any vaccines or hospital treatment at all, that's certainly not what the health authorities would want. The Samoa Medical Association has expressed these concerns, releasing a statement on the weekend acknowledging that they, quote, have an astronomical task ahead of us in regaining our people's confidence in the safety of our health service practice and in particular the continuation of the expanded program of immunisation in the future.
That's Nick Fogarty reporting there.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Well, Indonesian authorities have condemned the slaughter of almost 300 crocodiles in West Papua province, which was an apparent retaliation attack by villagers. As Girish Salani reports, a local man was first killed by one of the animals after he entered a croc farm.
Carcasses piled on top of one another, an act of revenge by locals after one of their own was killed by a crocodile.
On July 13, there was a resident looking for grass for his livestock, and suddenly the manager of the crocodile farm heard someone call for help. Then he immediately moved to the source of the cry and found that the resident was killed in a crocodile attack.
Officials in West Papua say a mob had formed after the victim's funeral in Sorong District. Around 600 people, armed with knives, machetes and hammers, entered the farm and dragged the crocodiles from their enclosures before hacking them to death.
There were spontaneous actions from residents around the area who entered the farm and killed the crocodiles in the farm. We tried to stop them, but they'd already been killed.
Authorities say the farm was run legally because it had an official permit from the Environment and Forestry Ministry. But residents here say the killings were justified.
I think what we did was right because this animal could not have been kept in this area, which is close to people. It's better that this kind of animal is kept in places far away, in the nearby forest, for instance, so that it's safer for people and those who have livestock and farms.
The local conservation agency says the slaughter was illegal, but authorities are yet to make any arrests.
That's Girish Salani reporting there. Well, at a time when the quality of sporting governance is under scrutiny in many parts of the Pacific, the Cricket Association in Samoa has been rewarded for its performances both on and off the field. It now sits just outside the top 20 on the International Cricket Council's scorecard. And as Richard Ewart reports, that means more money will flow into the Samoan game.
Cricket in Samoa has been growing rapidly over the last 5 years, with junior participation rates up by 400%. And the development manager for ICC East Asia Pacific, Jane Livesey, says that's just one of the reasons to get excited about what is happening in Samoa.
The significant things for me are the strong and proactive board that are leading the game. And what that means is, yes, they are now an associate member, as all members of the ICC are outside of the full members, but more significantly, we've seen a huge increase in the levels of funding coming into the game in Samoa because of their continuous growth in cricket in schools, villages and communities where they're playing more cricket more regularly.
As a result, Stella Fiali, the general manager of SICA, the Samoa International Cricket Association, says more doors are opening for them in the corridors of power.
The ICC scorecard really determines how much funding each member country is entitled to, and that ICC scorecard has all these different pillars that you're assessed on. So it's good to know that we're actually growing not only in terms of players, but also off the field in terms of our governance.
Samoa are one of six among the nine East Asia Pacific cricket countries who feature on the ICC scorecard. And as a result of recent constitutional changes, that means all six get a vote, and that in turn means the Pacific has a significant voice at the ICC's top table.
The East Asia Pacific continues to punch above its weight, and I think the other thing it does is draw attention to what our members have been doing in the region for the last 10 years and their success, and there's plenty for other members to learn from what's been happening here.
Samoa's success is having a knock-on effect in terms of recruitment at the top level, with more A-grade players who live overseas showing an interest in playing for their country of origin. But Stella Fiale says that part of their strategy has to be carefully managed.
With overseas players, it requires a lot of resources, not just financially, but also in kind as well. So we're very happy to have those players. I know there's quite an interest out there. They know we're slowly climbing up the ladder. We're happy, but at the same time, we just have to be very careful and take it very slowly.
Another recent change by the ICC means that from now on, all women's T20 matches between ICC members will be ranked as full internationals. The same will apply to the men's game from January next year, and significantly for the Pacific nations, none of whom, with the exception of PNG, have a turf wicket, all matches can be played on any surface.
What we're seeing is a genuine desire from an ICC perspective to open the game up and make it more accessible to more countries to play more often. And that means recognising that a turf pitch isn't always the way to go, and making it possible for countries to play on synthetic or hybrid pitches is the way forward.
Member countries like us in the Pacific can be more involved with the bigger guys, Europe, Asia and Americas. You can dream big and work your way there to make it a reality.
And that means the day when Samoa might host international matches outside regional tournaments and against teams from outside the Pacific might not be far away now.
That's Richard Hewitt reporting there. And that's all for Pacific Beat this morning. But don't forget, we will be back again this afternoon from 3 p.m. PNG time with Bill Bainbridge presenting the show. And I'll be back at the same time tomorrow from 6 o'clock PNG time. I'm Catherine Grau. Thanks so much for your company. You have a great day.